We have a gospel text this morning from Mark. This is still the first chapter of Mark, and we're right into the ministry of Jesus. And let's open ourselves to what the Lord may speak through us. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. The Gospel of the Lord. Yeah, right. No takers.
What's interesting about this piece in particular is how it's not part of our culture to really consider the possibility of this idea of unclean spirit and that it might in fact be real and is in the teachings of Christianity. And I came across a story some time ago with a teaching of the Magnus Stravolus, who was said to have been the reincarnation of John the Baptist, right? And he told about, he did a lot of work in healing, and one of the more common things that he did was unclean spirits. And he talked about how we become vulnerable to that. And that was interesting to me. He talked about environments and situations in which our will is made less. Our will is weakened. He talked about things like bars in particular, places where people might numb themselves to the pain of life, and in the process lessen their will and thereby be vulnerable to the attachment of this unclean spirit. And that's kind of stayed with me as a teaching and an understanding that part of our faith and our path is a path of choice at all times. We are choosing what comes into us. We're choosing where we stand. And this process of realizing that our vulnerability is our responsibility. You know, when too much grief comes to us and we don't find hope, you know, when too much drug or numbing agents, too much certain kinds of TV and certain pornography and all that kind of thing, it numbs us to the possibility that we could open and be vulnerable to that which is not wholesome. So I'm interested to see this passage again and connect to the realization that we have a very powerful place to stand when it comes to this issue.
One wonders if the things we choose allow us to be so undefended that real stuff comes out of us that might be already present within us. You know, the evil doesn't necessarily come from here, because we're all capable, you know. We're all capable of doing nasty things. And you wonder if somehow we have it very well blocked and in charge. But when you find yourself in a weakened position, or you find yourself somehow medicating yourself, or, you know, trying to escape and feel better, that we don't let loose some of the stuff that comes through, and there's the possibility of the negative power, if you will. Interesting. Agatha.
In that same line, It's a certain way of what you're saying is meeting up to someone that can heal that negative thought without repressing the negative thought, and speaking with that kind of authority of saying, get out of there and go someplace else. What years and years ago Leslie had said, when meanness is passed around, what concerns me is when Jesus said to that person, to that unclean spirit, to get out of the person that was in, where did that unclean spirit go? And that's scary, because it could always land on someone that didn't have that, and then they're stuck with something that they didn't want from the very beginning. You know what I mean?
In a world of quantities, whenever there's one force removed, another force takes over. Interesting.
Several years ago, I worked in a school for troubled children and adult children. And I was a speech therapist there. And I had one student, little girl, who had Tourette syndrome. I don't know whether you are familiar with that, but that's when they can't control saying things that aren't appropriate, and they just call out and say anything that comes to the mind. But anyhow, I was there, and there were several times where I felt, you know, the students weren't treated properly, but I stayed. And after a while, I'll go back to the young girl. She had lashed out in my office where we were doing our little exercises for speech therapy. And they came in and took her away and put her in what was not much bigger than a shower stall with a drain in there. And she was just devastated. She was a very sweet child, and she knew that she couldn't control it, and it just devastated her. So after a while, not too long after that, I realized that there were things going on in this particular institution that I was getting used to. And it didn't seem as bad as when I first came there. And I gave it a lot of thought, and I said, this is not right. I shouldn't be used to this. I shouldn't be used to people being mistreated as I thought some of the students were. And I quit. Well, after that, I went home, and my husband said, you know, you don't have a job anymore. But it just really was a wake-up call for me to realize that if you're in a certain environment for a long time, you can get used to the things that you shouldn't accept and shouldn't get used to. And that, as I said, was a wake-up call for me.
Thank you. We all become numb to things that we get so used to, we don't remember the impact. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think one thing to consider is we all have something that's unclean or something going on in our lives. And a consideration is to consider that I've read, and I truly believe that we always were, we always will be. Our soul in this incarnation attracts to it that which will help it become more loving and kind, teach us something during the journey. So having an unclean spirit, I think if there's something going on in your life, it's also an opportunity to kind of look at that spot, question it, and grow into a better spot, into a better place.
I took it from a different place. Maybe that's because of my mind, but I remember hearing this as a child in elementary school, and seeing that there were spirits coming out of people, and they were devil-like, and then I I guess I left it there because I don't want to go there. I don't know. I think this is a very pivotal gospel, but not in the same way that my learned friends think. I think it more maybe more pragmatic. I think it's very, very important that we see what happened to Jesus, that he first came with authority. And maybe there was somebody convulsing, but I know in those days they thought that evil spirits came into you, and that's how you got sick. But his whole ministry changed because he didn't speak like the scribes. He spoke with authority, and because he spoke with authority, he became very powerful to that group of people that listened to him, and then they went out and they spread the word, and now he became very powerful, and his whole ministry changed because at that time and after this, everybody knew who he was. So for Jesus and for this gospel, I thought that it was pivotal for his ministry.
And we did not discuss this. We never discussed beforehand.
I think in a social sense, we've gotten to a place in the world where there's so much negativity, and we're trying to find a way. Certain people are trying to find a way to be able to make this day be only good, only good. Only good things, only good things. And then just looking and seeing and listening and just looking and saying, this is just plain impossible. Why you can't accept, get angry, frustrated with what people are saying. And it's based on all this negativity. Years and years of a buildup of negativity, and it's going nowhere. And it just filters into people. And we end up, as time goes on, being as negative and snappy and things like that. It's horrible, just plain horrible.
Thank you. Anybody? Let me take a step back from all of that, and all that's really powerful stuff. You should listen to yourselves again. In the context of the gospel, just to put it in the context, Mark's gospel, as we said, has no infancy stories, and Mark's gospel begins very much with the good news of Jesus Christ, begins with John the Baptist preaching repentance, Jesus being baptized, heavens opening up, and Jesus realizes, or at least he hears the voice saying, you are my beloved son. And then he goes off into the desert, two lines. He's tempted there. Then he comes out and starts his ministry, starts teaching, and then he does this. In the context of the gospel, two things are happening. One of them is that Jesus is being recognized as the Son of God. That sounds not important to us, but where those people were coming from to be announced as he's the messianic person coming to fulfill all of Judaic hopes for all these centuries is big news. The interesting thing is, the devil or the evil spirit knows his name. He calls him Jesus of Nazareth. I know who you are. For the Hebrew ear, that means if you know someone's name, you have power over that person. That's why in Genesis, go back to the creation story, when God creates the animals and everything on the earth, Adam gives them a name, which was their way of saying Adam had domination over all of the animal kingdom. Okay, he had power over that. Why Jews don't use the name of God? Because to use the name of God in any of their writings or in speech indicates that they somehow have power over God, and that we know is not acceptable. So they don't use God. They use euphemisms or some substitutes, the angel of the Lord, that's God. That's just their way of getting around saying God, the angel of the Lord. And even today in their writings, there's some other substitute, but never the name of God. They never say God. The other thing is to understand in Mark's gospel, it's the first gospel, and so it starts with the first eight chapters are Jesus begins his ministry. His ministry is all about confronting evil, and this is the first time he confronts evil in his ministry. And he speaks on his own authority, which means, exousia is the word they use, it means that he speaks without quoting anybody. Because Hebraically, no prophet ever said anything on his or her own. It basically came down to, I am quoting God who said this. And if you're reading Judaic history and even Judaism, and it's developing theology today, they always begin by Rabbi so-and-so, and Rabbi so-and-so have said that, and they give you a statement, because the authority comes from the respect given to the person who had the original thought. And if I'm going to develop that thought, I need to say, okay, here's where the thought came from, and so I'm going to develop it a little bit, so this is my take on that. But that doesn't mean that in any way that statement, that first statement, is changed, okay? But Jesus is here among people who know that way of hearing, and he's saying it all by himself. He's just saying, I say to you, get out, and the evil spirit takes off. That's big news for the people of Judah. You know, we don't hear it that way, but that's really revolutionary, because something altogether new is taking place. The people say that. They stand back and say, whoa, what is this? That's why they act that way. Now, the first eight chapters of Mark's gospel take you through his ministry. Chapter 8, right dead center of the 16 chapters, is the story about Peter announcing to the world around us that he says, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And from that point on, the instruction becomes much more spiritual and much more about discipleship, about now what are you going to do with the word? So the first eight chapters is about knowing and getting from God through Jesus the word, and the next eight chapters is how do you go about living it? And then it ends with the resurrection. Actually, it ends with the empty tomb. There's no resurrection in Mark. There's just an empty tomb. Okay? A lot of development takes place, but putting that in context, this is a revolutionary turn in Hebrew literature, and certainly in Hebrew theology, what Jesus is doing. So it's momentous. We need to recognize it that way. More than that, I think when we talk about evil, you know, you said some very interesting, insightful things. And we can go in many directions on all of this, because there is something within all of us that is capable of becoming a Nazi. There's anger enough in us to become very vengeful. There are things inside of us that are present, that if life taps a certain button or pushes a certain button in our lives, we will respond in a way that we would find otherwise abhorrent. We may have had racial discriminatory thoughts. We may, in our privacy of our own mind, use slurs. You know, somebody told you, you know, when you go under anesthesia, people say a lot of things under anesthesia. They reveal they got boyfriends and girlfriends, all kinds of things. We reveal a lot when we're not defended. And our defenses are the things that make us who we are. But this, I think, is a very sobering point. The more we are attuned with the world around us, the more we are cultured, the more we are immersed in the values of our culture, positive or negative, the more numb we do become to what is good and what is not. Because it sinks down from being good and bad down to, well, what does that mean for me? It's good or it's bad for me. And then it goes beyond that into, I decide what's good and bad. And even if before I would have thought that was a bad thing, now somehow my circumstances have changed and that's a good thing. we can find ourselves really torn lots of times by what strikes us in the course of a day. I have a song I was gonna bring someday and play. We got this little way of playing music now off of the phone and stuff, thanks to Greg. And I've got this song that was done at a concert back at Taft a couple months ago. It was a country folk songs. They're folk songs. And this song is called If I Am One. And it's wonderful because he talks about if I am one, you need to be my two. And if I am weak, you need to be my strong. And if you're numb, I can be your feeling. And it goes back and forth in this dialogue. And the main connecting line is that sometimes I find myself here, sometimes I find myself there, but lots of times the line goes right through me, that I'm caught right in between the two. And ultimately, the song resolves itself by saying, if I'm two, you can be one, and if I'm bad, you can be good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But together, it says there's a line of forgiveness between you and me. And whether the forgiveness is in my house or in your house, we know that there's a whole body of need for forgiveness that is filled with deep distrust. And somewhere the line goes between our distrust and our ability to forgive. And whenever that line goes through us, we are called to move beyond. And that's this whole thing about good and evil, is we meet it every day. There's negativity around us all the time. My God, you read the newspaper, you don't have to get off the first paragraph of the first page, and you're right smack dab in the middle of evil. But sometimes I can be reading the evil and thinking, you know, that's good, because it agrees with something I'm thinking, or my politic, or my religious understanding, or my prejudices, or my view of the world, or my decision about what's important. That's the hairy, hairy part about being a disciple. We're always called to be more positive, but doggone it, if you're like me, sometimes you just need to be less positive and more negative because it just gets to you. And that can become as much a part of ourselves as the wish we have to be good. So the struggle that Jesus is going to face throughout his ministry is exactly that, right on down to the difference between life and death. That's the ultimate challenge. And what does it mean in our lives? So there are spirits around, and there are those who would say, as Lou said, you know, we grew up with really images of devils and pitchforks and all that stuff. I mean, and burned into your brain as a kid. They don't go away. They're still there. They pop up periodically and say, you know, maybe they were right because it's getting pretty bad out here. But then we go the other route and say, you know, there is the power of positive thinking, and positive will always take over evil. You know, the good will always win. I don't know that that's so true anymore. I really don't, because again and again we find that it's being compromised. So I don't know what we do with this. I don't know what you take home. But I do know that as people of faith, the challenge is real, and it's personal, and it really is up to us to find a way in God to remain positive influence in the world, especially when it's so negative. Amen.